Pull up a chair and buckle up. It's the Original Strength Podcast. Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to this week's edition of the Original Strength Podcast. We have a super special show for you this week. I'm talking to Dr. Joan Vernikos, who's the former director of life sciences for NASA. She is super brilliant. She's written several books. One of them is called Sitting Kills, Moving Heels. The other is called Designed to Move. And one is actually called Adventures in Chocolate, which really doesn't have anything to do with sitting or moving. But it's Adventures in Chocolate, so you gotta read it. Anyway, Dr. John is super brilliant. This is such a fun conversation. And did I tell you that she was the director of life sciences at NASA? All right, guys, buckle up.
What do you think your audience would like to hear?
So my audience is typically a health and fitness related audience. And I teach a movement education system, which is just about going to the original movements that we were all pre-programmed with. Yeah. So not really exercise, but all, but moving.
Good.
And so that the body can heal itself. So my audience is typically people that either have been suffering from pain, have gotten over pain, or just wanting to feel better, just to be happy. They just want to be happy.
Get out of bed.
Yes, get out of bed.
Where did you come from to your system?
I mean,
what's your journey?
So crazy story. I never grew up and always wanted to be Superman. And about 10 years ago, I was getting a bunch of overuse injuries, and I started looking for corrective exercises and things to quit hurting. And I got very frustrated because I was chasing my tail. I would try to fix something, and something else seemed to pop up. And one night, I just asked God to show me how to be bulletproof, like Superman. And in 2 weeks, I picked up a book about learning disorders in children. And he just connected all the dots about how neuroplasticity, how the brain heals, how we're pre-programmed with all these movements that actually heal the nervous system, heal the body, restore mobility, restore strength. So literally moving like a child was the thing. And it's been amazing.
Yeah. I talk to all ages, including quite old people. And it's very interesting when I say to them, be a child again. And they say, what's the answer? I said, be a child again. And they say, well, I said, well, didn't you have fun when you were a child? Yes. How about having some fun? And it takes a while to sink in. Some get it right away. I had one lady, I'm talking out of sequence here.
It's okay.
But one lady at one of my talks in the senior center, and she had a walker. She was with a walker, a very attractive lady. And she said, I want to tell you what I do to have fun. I said, yeah, okay, what do you do? She said, I thought, well, you know, she's got a walker. She said, my kitchen has chairs on rollers. And I put the radio on very loud with beautiful music, and I lean on the chairs and I dance and push the chair around and I dance. And I thought, you know, this is fantastic.
That is.
You know, and all the, you know, the rest of the audience just applauded and clapped. And I said, look, it's not difficult. Have fun.
That's awesome.
Whatever it is that stimulates you and satisfies you. And it's a bit of a challenge, you know, because someone will say, well, I can't sit on the floor. I said, okay, you got to start somewhere. You sit on the chair. Why do you sit on the chair? Well, it's comfortable. Okay. But why do you sit on the chair? Did you always sit on the chair? Well, no. I said, look, do you have any grandchildren? Do you have any little ones around? See what they do. They squat. When was the last time you squatted? You know. I said, well, you can do it again. And just if you could do it once, you can also do it again. Anyway, I digress.
No, it's beautiful. It's perfect. And the thing is children have such a light and curiosity, and they're just beaming with joy.
Oh yeah.
And we're never supposed to lose it. And we're certainly capable of holding on to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Always. And the things a child does spontaneously are fun things. And the crime that has happened is that playgrounds have been abandoned.
Yes.
In schools. I mean, I volunteered to go between 3 and 5 in the afternoon because there was no one there, if any children wanted to come and play. But nobody came. And it is tragic, I think. Absolutely tragic.
And you know what young children are really good at doing? They're really great at changing postures frequently.
Oh, yeah. Boy, you got that somewhere, didn't you?
I've read your book.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. Yeah, and people don't understand it. You know, my Sitting Kills book, which was the first sort of practical adaptation, if you will, of what we do and how come we're in trouble. I said, you know, you've got to be a child again. And people, after my talks, people would say, oh, what you're saying is, how many hours a day do you sit? I said, no, that's not what I'm saying. Because the study I did in healthy volunteers that we put in bed continuously, because it mimics being an astronaut in space. It removes the force of gravity pulling downward. It only pulls across the chest when I'm lying down. So it minimizes the influence of gravity. And so we had these volunteers lying in bed for days, and we'd measure this and that and the other. And various colleagues of mine tried all kinds of exercise. Of course, you know, if you're lying in bed, the solution is exercise. Okay, so much exercise, so many devices were tested. And yes, they may have helped, but it never prevented the changes of lying in bed. And so I asked the question, because my mind works that way, simply. How often, or should I stand up? How many times do I need to stand up to prevent the effects of lying in bed 24 hours a day? Okay. What does it take to prevent these changes? Obviously, exercise didn't do it. And I did every 4 hours standing up, or every 8 hours standing up. No, sorry, the other way around. I stood up 4 times a day, or 8 times a day, assuming it's a 16-hour of being awake.
Right.
And it was amazing. I couldn't believe it, because what I did was, actually, I had standing up as the control to exercise, because I had them stand up and move, to be taken to a treadmill and walk for 3 miles an hour, which is not very fast, for 15 minutes. So every hour on the hour, or every 2 hours, or every 4 hours, whatever it was, they would get up and go to the treadmill and walk for 15 minutes at 3 miles an hour. So as a control to that, because I had them stand up instead of in contrast to lying down, I also did the same study, but just standing up next to the bed for 15 minutes. We did a double blind, and the same subjects came over and did all the variations on the theme. And I had a very good statistician, and he called me in at the end, and he said, John, you're not going to like this. I said, what am I not going to like? He said, the standing is better than the walking.
That's amazing.
Isn't it amazing?
Because it's so counterintuitive to today's health and fitness wisdom.
Oh, up to this day, if you just keep looking at the sitting studies, and there are lots of them, and in offices and in this and that, and all the studies look at how many hours a day do you sit. It has nothing to do with how many hours a day you sit. Because when you stand up for 15 minutes, four times a day or eight times a day, it's not many hours. Or if you exercise vigorously for half an hour a day in a gym, it doesn't prevent the effects of lying in bed continuously.
So basically what you found in your studies and your research is that changing postures or getting up frequently from either sitting or lying in bed actually helps reverse prevent aging more so than walking or exercise.
Absolutely. And if you want to be healthy, whatever you're doing, just stand up. I say to them, every 30 minutes, stand up every hour at least. And they say, well, and walk. I said, you don't have to. And they look at me like, you're strange, you know. But no, you don't have to. It's the change in posture and it's the interruption. The body is tuned. The body needs tuning. You talk about neuroplasticity.
Yes.
It's silent when you're sitting or lying down. It's silent. You want to stimulate it. How are you going to stimulate it? It's like a tuning fork. You need to keep stimulating your body. It's as simple as that.
Even if it's standing for a long period of time, that's still silent. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. Standing for a long period of time is not healthy. It's just as unhealthy as sitting for a long period of time or lying for a long period of time. It's interrupting. It's giving you that little jerk. Deborah Rose is at University of California, Riverside, and she has a gerontology clinic. And the way she was telling me, she tests people who come into her clinic, into her organization, especially older people, but all of them. She has developed a test that is basically standing up from your chair, unassisted preferably, but assisted if you have to when you start undoing. How many times can you stand up and sit down in 30 seconds? Okay. So the average is about 9 times in 30 seconds. Anything more than that is good. Anything less than that, you're in trouble. So you have a gauge as to whereabouts you are on the scale of your leg support, your cardiovascular system, your breathing, you know, a lot of factors are affected by just the simple business of standing up and changing posture, apart from the vestibular and the inner ear stimulation.
So I wanted to ask you, since you mentioned that, In Original Strength, we teach that one of the pillars of human health is activating the vestibular system. Do you think that the changing in posture, the reason it is so powerful,
I believe that strongly.
Awesome.
I think that's extremely important. And that's what's important, you know, because I say to people, they say, well, how long should I stand? I say, it doesn't matter. It's the change in posture that's important, and they can't quite believe that. They can't quite grasp it, that that's all you need to do.
So I want to get into some of the gravity stuff. 10 years ago, when I started learning about the wonders of the human design, I went to a planetarium, and they were talking to us about, you know, the movie was playing, and it was talking about astronauts. As soon as they go into space, they start losing bone mass. because of there's no gravitational pull on the bones or the vestibular system, so it's not needed, and the brain's like, well, I don't need these anymore. Yeah. So it starts to take away the bone mass. But that was amazing to me because it taught me that change is possible really fast in the body.
Oh yeah, it's instant.
And so if the body can take away that fast, it can also put into it that fast.
Sure.
So how much does gravity affect aging? Or like, cause you did some really cool stuff studying astronauts in space. How much does lack of gravity affect aging?
The rate of change. Again, it's very fast because, I mean, you have the flu and lie in bed for 4 days, and you get up and you're dizzy. You've lost your balance. You're basically like an astronaut.
Ah.
Because the minute, well, if you lie down in bed during the day, you will start, and basically you're like an astronaut, you will start urinating, passing urine. But if you lie in bed at night, and you're healthy, well, I can explain what I mean by healthy there. But if you do it at night, if you lie in bed at night, you don't pee, okay? Now, if you're older and you get up and have to pee 20 times a night, it means that the system that shuts off the urination in response to lying down has gone off. Why? And I say that to my board of directors, people that come to my talks, and they really are interested because everybody suffers from that. You don't have to be very old, you know. And they say to me, well, how many times a night do you get up? I said, I don't. You don't? You know, like, what's the matter with you? I said, I don't. Why? Because if you are stimulating the system during the day, then the shut-off system will work at night. But if you don't stimulate it during the day, it doesn't need to shut off during the night. There's no difference between day and night. You get that?
Yeah.
You know, you tune it by getting up and down, up and down, up and down during the day. And then at night, when you lie down and you are like an astronaut, you don't have to pee. You don't have to get up and pee. You don't have diuresis. In the early days of the space program, because we collected urine 24 hours a day and all that sort of stuff, I said, well, you know, we see this increased output of urine, but is it, and we know that we're losing calcium from the bone. Well, are you losing calcium over 24 hours or only when you are lying down during the day? What if when you shut down? And that's when we found out that you don't shut off during the night. So, in space, as you age, you don't shut off because you're not stimulating your body with gravity throughout the day. There is no difference. There is no contrast.
And so to be an astronaut on Earth, all you have to do is just stay sitting or lying in bed. Yeah. And essentially it's like being in zero gravity.
All our volunteers were lying in bed. And then a colleague of mine at Dallas-Fort Worth did a very interesting experiment because he had participated in some of our bed rest studies. So he had data on a lot of data, cardiovascular data, and when they stood up after lying in bed for 30 days, you know, what changes had you seen? A tendency to faint, called orthostatic hypotension, like your blood pressure drops suddenly, and you might faint. And he recalled the same subjects 30 years later. He invited them to go down to Texas and just be tested. And 30 years later, the data, as they were walking around, as a function of having grown 30 years older, was the same as after 30 days in bed when they were younger. Isn't it lovely?
It is.
So, you know, because of course, when I started talking and I started seeing things that were like aging, I thought, well, this is weird. I mean, you know, who's going to believe me? I have to be very careful that it's age-like, okay? And I had put out a pamphlet to NASA that said age-like changes. Because I didn't dare say it's like aging. I mean, right. People would be all over me. And but gradually, the data started coming. In fact, yesterday, I proofread, I galley-proofed an article that is coming out in a handbook of space physiology, something like that. And it's called Space and Aging. And it shows you the chart of changes as a function of lying in bed, as a function of aging, or lying in bed, in space, and aging. And they're identical. Mm. The same systems. In fact, I'll send you a copy of the galley. It'll come
up. Awesome.
Because it gives you a different, you know, you're going to scratch your head and say, gee whiz, really? Yes, really.
And so it's still crazy, though. Something as simple as moving around, changing your posture,
yeah,
can stop that and or reverse it. Yeah. And what's really cool is, because you're talking about like even having to pee at night or not pee at night. So by activating the vestibular system and changing postures globally, you affect every system inside of the system.
Every single system of the body.
That's amazing.
It is. You know, people would drive me nuts. They would say, oh, well, sitting is the new smoking. No, it's not. It has nothing to do with smoking. In fact, I said the smokers are better off. What do you mean they're better off? I said, because they go outside. They have to get up and, you know, they want to smoke a cigarette, they have to get up and go outside to smoke. So they are healthier from a sitting, standing, you know, regulation point of view than the non-smokers. And that really blew them. I said, besides, you know, there's nicotine and there's other things in smoking that, you know, we're not talking about. We're talking about simple things we normally do in the course of a day. What is it we do? Well, I mean, talking to you, that's your line. But it's true, if you stop and think, what do you do normally in a certain situation? When we tell to kids, sit still, it's the worst thing we can say to them. The worst thing you can say to a child, sit still. And they will sit and they will learn to sit to keep you happy.
Well, the consequences.
Yeah. And suffer the consequences, exactly. And as you can see from Design to Move, I mean, the data is coming in on all kinds of illnesses and all kinds of, you know, the diabetes, all kinds of parameters. You know, you only need to lie in bed for 2 hours to start changing the cardiovascular response to standing, to feeling faint.
Wow.
They did that when they were looking at that. When we sent astronauts up, we had no idea what was going to happen. Absolutely no idea. And, you know, what questions were we asking? Well, we didn't really understand what was going on until we took these people, volunteers, and put them to bed. And it's such a simple thing that we do all the time, right?
Right.
and that's when, and you didn't, we did five and 7 days studies. I mean, the Russians used to do 100 days.
Oh my gosh.
Because that's what duration they hoped to send astronauts up in space. Well, I didn't have the money or the facilities to do that. So I started saying, okay, how quickly do you see? And then I, with a French colleague, we used 4 days in bed as a test system to test what we call countermeasures, counteractions, things that will prevent the effects. You don't need to do a month. Your changes become worse the longer you stay, and it takes you longer to recover when you get up. Mm. But normally you don't need a lot. The systems that you're looking at, the ones I was looking at, the diuresis, the plasma volume, your volume changes, your blood volume, because you don't need all that volume anymore. So you get rid of it, it's excess. Your sensitivity of your blood pressure to postural change, the vestibular system, balance and coordination. Calcium shoots out of the urine, with the urine right away. Wow. And I used to say, well, they still do some. If you want to study bone, you need to put them in bed for months. Well, it depends on what you measure. Just because our measurements aren't sensitive enough. And that's what happened. We had to x-ray. Well, by the time you see it in an x-ray, it was a month. It was a couple of months, 3 months, 4 months. But actually the process happens right away. It's initiated right away. But then you can recover it.
You're very deliberate in parsing the difference between health and fitness and design to move.
Yes.
How can you explain real quick the difference between health and fitness?
I think we look at fitness mostly, or most fitness people look at the aerobic fitness. And certainly by standing up several times a day, it helps, but it will not help you run a marathon. So if you look at a triangle, you have your baseline, which is lying down or whatever. And then you have what you normally do during the day. And then you have exercising at a certain level. And then at the top, you have elite athletes. And the difference between those is really frequently intensity and frequency of the stimulus. Because both are, this high intensity training makes a lot of sense to me. It's not a lot of time, but it's intensity. And that, and several times a day, you mustn't forget. You see, the problem is in space, they exercise like crazy, hours. Devices, multi-million dollar devices to help them think they are getting resistive exercise and aerobic exercise and this and that and the other. But it still, it helps, but it doesn't prevent the effects of being in space. Why? Because the minute you stop in space, you're in space. When you stop on Earth, you're still in gravity. And the after response to exercise or to moving or to whatever, there is an after response. And you know, nobody has measured it in space. I keep telling them there is no after response in space. They've never measured it. I go to my deathbed and I keep telling them, for heaven's sake, somebody do it. It's simple. It's almost like they don't want to know. Because what would they do? Because if you're exercising for 4 hours a day, you say, okay, during that time, fantastic. And the instant you stop, it's like going into space for the first time. That's my theory.
So without some force of artificial gravity in space, you cannot prevent aging in space.
No, I don't think so. And it affects so many systems. It affects the absorption of drugs. It affects the nutrition, you know, what actually is absorbed and isn't absorbed. Your sleep. I remember a Russian cosmonaut, and he was a cardiologist. And he was one of the first to be in space on Salyut for 6 months. And we were, in fact, my husband and I were having lunch with him, and my husband, who's not a scientist, said, what's the worst thing about your being in space? And he thought, and you know, he really took his time and thought. He said, putting your head down on a pillow. You have no sensation in space of putting your head down on a pillow. Mm. Now, it's fascinating, isn't it? From the mouth of babes, we've learned more from astronauts telling us things like that, that then make you think, why? And there is no sensation of putting your head down on a pillow. Well, what does that do? It means the brain does not see gravity, does not see its weight, which is a function, must be, of sleep and of the detox and everything that happens during sleep. I think it's fascinating. All these things need to be explored, and we haven't even scratched the surface.
Oh, man, this is exciting.
But
based off your research, you also pretty much are able to conclude that you can't out-exercise a sedentary lifestyle either, because that's like being in space. Like if you exercise for an hour a day, but then you sit for 13 hours a day,
you negated the benefits.
And that's typically what most people try to do, is out-exercise their sedentary lifestyle.
The gym culture is exercise 3 times a week. I mean, that's what I get. You exercise, yes. Oh, good for you. How many, how often, you see? Well, 3 times a week. Oh, how long? 30 minutes. I think, oh my God, how am I going to break the news to you? You're not doing anything. Everything's a little bit useful, but it's not preventative. I mean, you're not normal. You're not back to how you started out as a child, as a young person.
So I think that's important, though, because you can, so say if you lift weights and you're trying to prevent aging, so you lift weights to build your muscle, but you can still have the inner systems inside can still break down because you live a sedentary lifestyle and you're just not moving often and consistently throughout the day.
Yeah.
So you may maintain your muscle mass a little bit longer.
Oh, you may be King Kong or whatever. You
know. Right.
Superman. but you're not normal. Your physiology is not functioning normally. And the minute you stop, you lose it. This will tell you something, right?
Yes.
Right there. The fact that it, the minute you stop, you lose it, tells you what you're doing is not that important. That's frightening, isn't it?
It's wild.
Yeah, but you know, think of it as you know, it's a
But I'll tell you, for somebody like me, it's hopeful because
of course.
I have, especially since I've been learning the miracles of crawling and rolling around on the floor and all that stuff, it has pushed away in my mind that lifting weights or doing cardiovascular exercise is not the end all be all. And it may not even be necessary if I just use my body the way it's designed and keep it healthy.
That's right. I mean, you don't need more than your body weight, really.
Right.
That's what you've got. I mean, might as well use it.
And I can't help but look at other animals and think that we're the only ones that try to exercise.
Isn't it wonderful?
To do stuff, you know, and I'm like, why don't they do it? Because they don't need to do it because they're busy being animals and doing what they're designed to do.
They climb up trees and they swing from one branch to another. Isn't it wonderful?
Yes.
You know?
So what would it be like if humans actually acted like humans or moved like humans?
Tarzan.
Yes.
Yeah. That's, whoever built the designed the chair did this a disservice. Because you go to Africa and they're still sitting on the ground. You go to India and they're squatting. And they eat squatting. And they cook and they do everything sitting on the floor and squatting most of the time. Now, do they die later? Probably not, because they die from other things. You know, hygiene and this and that. Obviously, something will get you. But they are flexible.
But if you could enjoy a quality of life and be capable and able at age 70, that's better than living to 100 and be an invalid for the last 30 years of your life.
That's right. That's right. I had an uncle who died at 99 and a half years old. And the year before, he painted the outside of his house. Okay? And he called me one day and he said, John, I'm in the hospital. I was in California and he was in Athens. I was in the hospital. I said, what happened? He said, well, I was crossing the pedestrian crossing to the supermarket across the road, and a lady driving a car hit me. And I broke my femur. So I had to go to the hospital to have it set. And that's why I'm in the hospital. I said, he said, what can I do? I said, get out of the hospital. He said, well, it's night here. I can't very well get out of the hospital, but I'll get out of the hospital tomorrow. I said, great. When you get out of the hospital, I'll tell you what to do. But I said, right now, can you sit up? And he said, well, yeah. I said, can you sit up and swivel so that your legs are dangling over the side of the bed? You're sitting up and your feet are dangling on the side of the bed. Can you do that? He said, yes. I said, good. I want you to do that. I want you then to lie down. And then half an hour later, I want you to sit up again for a couple of minutes and then lie down again. And sit up, lie down. And then tomorrow morning when you go home, I want you to find somebody who will... Well, he says, I have this young woman coming to help her with the house chores. I said, okay, you're going to give her a job. She's going to have a stopwatch in the days when we had stopwatches. And she will remind you to stand up every 30 minutes. I said, I don't care how you stand up, whether you lean on the chair at first to stand up or whatever you do, you will eventually learn to stand up with, you know, just having your arms across your chest and standing up every 30 minutes. He said, okay, I can do that. I said, sure. And he called me a couple of weeks later and he said, I'm bragging, but I went to my orthopedic surgeon and he couldn't believe that my bones had set completely.
Wow. And he was 98.
And I said, you know, that's fantastic. So I went around, anytime anybody asked me, well, what can I do, especially older people, the vice president of the International Academy of Aeronautics, he had given a talk, and it was, the room was dark at the Reagan building, a big dinner, and I was walking past to go to my table, and he's waving, and I see that he's sitting in a wheelchair. And he said, what's your book about? I said, it's about the gravity. I mean, he was in the space business. It's about gravity and how we need to use it as long as we live. Oh, he said, how? I said, well, stand up every 30 minutes. And then I realized he's sitting in the wheelchair. And I thought, oh, let me get back to my table, you know. And I do that. And he said, sure. I thought, okay. And I disappeared. And someone at the table said, you know who that was? I said, no, it's George Mueller. And he's the vice president of this illustrious organization. He said, what did you tell him? I said, I told him to stand up every 30 minutes. He says, but he's in a wheelchair. And I know, I realized that afterwards. End of story. So months later, I get a call from the young man who was at the table, told me who it was. And he says, we were invited to dinner at the Mueller's. I thought, oh, okay. And we rang the doorbell, my parents and I. And who should open the door but George, standing up. And he said, my father says, oh, George, what happened? You know, he wasn't in a wheelchair. He said, at least in the house, I don't need the wheelchair. I take it as a precaution. He was 93 at the time. As a precaution when I go out. But I have no problem with balance or moving around, you know, anywhere. He said, well, how did you do that? He said, I stand up every 30 minutes. So I said, I had to tell you. So I got information like that. I would tell people, just stand up every 30 minutes, flippantly, right? But it came back time and time again. I had at least six people over 90, mostly men. Women didn't have the discipline to stand up. The men got it in their heads and they did it. But it's possible. And the reason he died is not because he was sick or anything like that, but his son died of pancreatic cancer. And he couldn't face that. That was a completely emotional thing. He had no reason to die at 100. But die and be active. You know, you don't want to be a vegetable, and being 120 years old and not being able to move is not quality of life.
Right. But those stories tell you, like, to me, those are miracles. I call them miracles because they're not necessarily the way of the world. Yeah. But they highlight the power in our design.
Yes.
That if you engage in the design, it knows what to do.
The miracle is becoming aware of yourself and what you're handed, what you start out with, what's the raw material that you have.
Wow.
And suddenly at 20 years old, we go to college and we forget. Right?
Yes.
And we sit in beanbags or things like that. Or we sit at the desk and sprawl on the table. And on a lounge or whatever. And we're there. And they say, well, how can I watch TV? I said, I don't care what you do. Get up, cook, do something that you normally would do, and you're still watching. Every commercial, stand up. Great timing. It's built into your life. Stand up every commercial. I mean, you know, discipline your structure so that you are encouraged to live the way you used to.
That is awesome.
It's so there.
It is. I've got a question. You've written, I think you've written 6 books, and all of them are about, to me, the wonders of the body and how gravity affects the body. However, you have one outlier that's called Adventures in Chocolate.
That was my midlife crisis.
That was your midlife crisis.
I wanted to do something with my hands that would produce a result right away, and that would be appreciated by other people. Because I wrote papers, I wrote books, I gave talks, went to meetings, projects, reports out of the kazoo, and the satisfaction was a millisecond of transient something. And it was part of my job, or whatever the job was. And I wanted to do something. And so I looked, when I was younger, quite a bit younger, and I was doing research at NASA, I decided I wanted to be a plumber. Why was I particularly good at being a plumber? No, I thought I like solving problems, you see.
Okay.
And it was the challenge of solving the problem. I had fixed enough, you know, toilets or whatever in my house along the way, not very well, but. And I thought, well, I'd be a plumber for women. Because in those days, you know, you had to, the only plumbers were men. And I thought maybe I'd get a clientele of women who might not want to bring a man in the house or whatever. I don't know my thinking. But it didn't last very long, that desire. I get teased a lot about my plumbing days.
So you actually invented the first white chocolate truffle?
Yes. I'll tell you why. I'm a pharmacologist by training. Okay. So my background is in my degree, my PhD is in pharmacology. People say it's farming. No, it's not farming. It's how drugs act on the body. Okay. And I particularly worked in the area of stress because my advisor happened to be working in how the brain regulates hormones and the response to stress, and how the hormones like steroids, dexamethasone now with the COVID that they use, feeds back to the brain to shut off further stress. So the system is such that it's a self-contained negative feedback system. So you are exposed to stress, your hormones shoot up to protect your body, like the steroids that are produced by your adrenal are increase your glucose, your metabolism is stimulated, and everything, your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure increases, all this to protect yourself from attack, to be ready for attack or for fleeing, fright, flight, or fleeing. And when the threat, for whatever reason, is dissipated, these hormones feed back on your brain system to shut off further response. So if at that point you get another stress, you don't get an it inhibits the system. So it protects the system from further stimulation. So that was my research, and I was fascinated with that. I followed this advisor for my PhD, and so that was my background, pharmacology. So when I got this notion to, you know, go into chocolate making, I didn't have a clue. I said, no idea. Had to learn from scratch. you know, I don't like following instructions. You may have noticed that. And I was experimenting, and of course my husband was eating the chocolates, and I asked how I like, oh, he's the wonderful. And anyway, we give samples to people who came in the shop, because I couldn't bring myself to sell anything to anybody. That was a handicap for the business. But because I never sold anything to anybody in my life. Anyway, this lady would come in, and I offered her a chocolate, and she says, oh, no, can't have it. I said, please, it's all right, you know. No, she says, I said, why? She says, I get migraines. Oh, really? And the pharmacologist kicked in. I said, do you get migraines with white chocolate? Oh, yes, I get migraines with chocolate. I said, do you get migraines with white chocolate? She says, what is white chocolate? I said, okay. White chocolate is the same as chocolate without the cocoa liquor. So it's a cocoa butter, essentially. It has flavor, but it doesn't have the active ingredients that stimulate, that are like coffee, like cocoa. She says, well, she says, I'm really scared. I said, look, take this home. And this was a piece of a bar. And try it. And my husband said, you wouldn't have her do it in the shop, did you? You sent her home to to test the system. I said, no, you know, she would be more comfortable. She came in the next day absolutely ecstatic that she ate the white chocolate and nothing happened. She didn't get a migraine. I said, okay, I'll make you an all white chocolate truffle so you won't get migraines. And that's how it happened.
Well, on behalf of the whole world, thank you for making white chocolate truffles. They're delicious.
Oh, I'll have to send you some.
So it's quite amazing. Like, so you are helping people heal their bodies, and yet you also invented white chocolate truffles to help people smile. Like, it's you're hitting all the areas to improve health.
Well, I like solving problems. If something happens, it triggers my curiosity. Why does it happen? What is it we can do about it? Mm. It's all part of the same scheme. But playing is the main thing. As we go through life and we don't forget how to play, then we'll be happy as long as we live and young.
Amen. Dr. Jones.
We'll be young and happy as long as we live.
I'm in. I'm signing up. How young are you, Dr. Joan?
You going to publicize that? That's okay. I have to think when I was born, because then I have to figure it out. So I was born in 1934. How goes your math?
I'm embarrassed to tell you that I used to be a statistician, but
oh dear,
I'm a bit rusty.
I'm 86.
Right on.
Okay.
That's awesome.
And, you know, so far so good. I go to my doctor once a year and he says, I don't know what you're doing. Whatever it is you're doing, keep doing it. I enjoy this. Life is to be enjoyed.
I play. Yes. Yes. Dr. Joan, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. This is awesome.
You're very, very welcome. Very welcome. Keep doing great things.